Comics Coffee Metal Podcast, episode 132.
Greetings and welcome to the Comics Coffee Metal Podcast. I'm your host, Don Carinas, and today I am welcoming back a returning guest who I've been long awaiting for them to return because that means they have the second issue of their book ready to go out, and I really loved the first one, and I can't wait to see what happens in issue two of Savage Wizard. Man, I messed that up already. Savage Wizard. It's late. We're rolling with it. It's fine. I've had too much coffee anyway. But without further ado, Leslie Julian, thank you for coming back on.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Don. I'm super excited to be back.
Yeah, I've been, you know, there's people I've had on, and you know, I'm like, I always want to have people come back on because, you know, it's good to, you know, keep talking about these things I'm enjoying and the creators that I'm following and just who I think are just doing great work. And I was really excited to see that finally Savage Wizard 2 is ready to go, or at least for the Kickstarter. I don't know what the status of the whole book is, but we'll get into that later. Because I really enjoyed Savage Wizard number 1. I'm going to mess that up.
I didn't realize it's such a tongue twister. It's what you're saying, but you're right. It is a little bit of a tongue twister.
Mostly for me, I guess. I don't know. Savage Wizard number 1 was really fun. You know, and I got to reread it because the last time I read it was, I read it when it first was, you know, I had the digital edition. So when I first got it there, and then I read it again a few months ago, I want to say maybe November. And then, I looked at it again. And I'm just like, this is just such a fun book. And, you know, as fun as a book it can be with the protagonist getting their hand cut off and their entire way of life changing in an instant. But, on top of that, though, it's just something like, I can't wait to delve back into this world. And I'm really glad that, even though you had to, like, you know, take on more of the reins of yourself with the writing and then find a new artist, that it seems like, from what I can tell, like, it's still going to feel the same. It's still going to look the same and all that. And I want to talk to you about the search for a new artist and finding that similar feel. Cause you know, Brian, he definitely had he created a look for the world, and that you guys wrote up, and you know, while I'm sure there could be plenty of other great takes to it, you know, it definitely was that great fusion of just like big exaggerated action, but also like just nice lush nature stuff. And I it looks like that's just going to be continuing on with this new artist. But first things first, Leslie, Comics Coffee Metal, what are you digging right now?
Right now, for metal, I'm digging Sepultura. I into them I think it was tangentially related to you in my Instagram feed. I think it's Coffee and Metal, that Instagram channel. They're promoting a lot of like black metal bands for Black History Month. And I checked out Sepultura, and I loved what I heard. So definitely digging Sepultura right now. And not coffee, but in terms of drinks, I'm digging the Blake's Hard Cider these days. It's a really fun hard cider drink. So yeah, check that out. It's good stuff.
Yeah. I'm not really a alcoholic drinker person. I'm pretty much a teetotaler. But you know, cider, like if I ever were to, I'd be like one of those guys who just like drinks nothing. Like I wouldn't drink any actual just like hard liquor or beer. Yeah. I would always have like the hard cider or the hard lemonade, you know, or I'd be the guy ordering a Shirley Temple or something. Well, that's not alcoholic. You know what I mean? I'd be ordering the pina coladas or something, you know?
I drink like maybe like 12 times a year. So like when I do drink, I just go for ciders. Honestly, I don't drink a ton, but yeah, ciders
my jam. They sound good because ciders are great, you know? Yeah. And so I'd imagine, plus the effects of, you know, loosening up a little bit, sounds pretty good too. I'm glad you're into Sepultura now, even though they're disbanding.
I know, sad. I was like, of course, I find a fan.
But you know, there is, but yeah, you know,
amazing stuff. I really like what I'm
hearing. There's almost 40 years of amazing stuff. But yeah, Derek Green, their vocalist who took over for Max Cavalera, is just phenomenal. You know, and I don't give them enough spins in my own rotation. Like I have a few of the earlier stuff, but I haven't really given their later stuff enough plays because it is good. It is just right on there, and their live performances are just nuts. It's insane.
Yeah, I just like love the vocal energy I'm hearing from Derek, and yeah, I just like immediately, like, just the first song I heard was like Roots, Bloody Roots, And I'm just like, I love this. Like,
instantly. Yeah. You know, I actually covered that song a few years ago.
Oh, nice.
It's like, it's such a fun song.
Yeah.
Cause it's really just one riff. Mm-hmm. And I drove my wife absolutely fucking nuts, like rehearsing it, because I'm hearing the heavy distorted bound, bound, bound. She's hearing me plunking away on her headphones, bing, 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 like all night. And she's like, what are you doing?
Like, it'll make sense. I promise it'll make sense. And it's all French.
Yeah. And then burst a few blood vessels, screaming it out and all that. It's a lot of fun. Roots, Bloody Roots. That's one of those like all time classic metal songs. And whether it's Max or Derek performing it, it's just a jam. Undeniable, I guess, you know. But so that's awesome. How about comics? What comics have you been digging lately?
Comics, I'm slacking. I have a big fat queue of stuff that I need to read right now. I have recently things that I haven't read Mary Tyler Moorhawk by Dave Baker. That's sitting mm-hmm. there just waiting for me to pick up. Full Tilt should be in the mail any day now. Yeah. By Jason Coplan, who I'm sure everyone who is into indie comics is eagerly awaiting that book. That's definitely been in my queue for a while. Beyond that, what else do I have just sitting there waiting for me to read? Just a lot of Kickstarter stuff, unfortunately. Like, I just like, I got like, ooh, I'm so excited it's there, and then like I'm too busy making my own stuff to crack the books open. But there's definitely some great stuff that I need to just stop and smell the flowers and read some comics.
I'm with you. I started this year. I'm like, I found my old Android tablet from like 10 years ago. Like, it still managed to work, at least to read PDFs.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm gonna have this set up next to my bedstand, and it's only good to read PDFs. So I'm gonna read whatever, because I buy, you know, when I do a Kickstarter, 99% of the time I'm doing the digital option. One, because I don't have the space for a lot of books. Two, I get to back more than I normally would because it's a little bit of a cheaper option. Three, it's easier for everyone involved. Yep. No one has to pay printing costs or shipping costs or about fulfillment. Just send me the link, bro. It's cool. But also it's very easy for me then to like put off reading it and all that. And I just got my link to Full Tilt, and I'm kind of kicking myself for not backing the physical version now, even though I'm like, at the time, I was like, oh, I couldn't swing it. But yeah, because I watching Jason Coplan just like, you know, and he was on the show back when it was going, and I've known him for quite some time. This knowing how much he's been putting into that book, I'm so glad to see the reactions people are getting of it, because that's what we've all been telling him for like years at this point. It looks phenomenal. You're great. People are going to love it. And of course, you know, as you know, you can be told that, but the reaction is what you kind of really need from the people who aren't your friends and people who aren't.
Yeah. It's great to see a true comic success story like that. Like, just the anticipation and like the positive, feedback he's been getting. I'm just like super excited for him, and also super excited to get that book in my freaking hands one of these
days. I did get a chance before he came on the show to like read the non-lettered version. And it's just a beautiful thing to look at, man. It's just great. And speaking of beautiful things to look at, Savage Wizard. You know, it's as I mentioned at the top of the show, the first issue, you know, I really liked the art from Brian Flint. I thought it was really lush. It was really just action-packed, really, really just full of energy and excitement. And so, you know, we don't have to get into why, but like, you know, he's no longer the artist. Doug is no longer co-writing with you. I wasn't sure, you know, after, you know, you kind of announced like, hey, here's the situation. You know, it's carrying on. It's me. It's this new artist. And I'm like, okay, cool. Because, you know, I reading your stuff, like, I'm like, I was just excited to see this story continue. And you have a new artist with, forgive me if I get the name, Nero Crane.
Yep, that's him.
And I checked out their Instagram real quick, and I'm like, this fits. If anything, it seems to be, I'm trying to think of it right, almost, I don't want to say tighter, but like it's definitely in that realm where it's just got those the big expression, but also the nice lush details for everything. What was the kind of feeling when you're like, okay, I'm gonna have to carry the torch or Savage with it all, you know, and move forward with Tobin, the Great Letterer.
Mm-hmm.
And what was like kind of that feeling of like, okay, what do I do? Did you ever feel like I'm not gonna, it's gonna be, that's it, we're done, I guess, we won't move on? Or
yeah,
like, no,
initially
this is not,
I was
gonna
like,
die.
All right, I guess like one and done. And I think I kind of said that to Doug privately, and unfortunately Doug wasn't able to continue because of some health issues he had at the time. And so he just kind of wanted to, yeah, take like a long break from things. And I asked him, like, you know, sure, I'm leaving space for you if you want to return. But he, at least at the time, was definitely just wanted to step away. I told him, I was like, I think maybe I should stop with Savage Wizard also, but he really encouraged me to keep it going. And so I was like, okay, I guess I have to keep it going. Like, I mean, I always had a passion for the book, and Doug did as well. I mean, Doug is basically the reason why it got past the idea stage, because, you know, we were talking and he was like, we should make this into a comic. But so after Doug had to exit, and Brian unfortunately also had to exit just because of kind of family obligations. Once I was kind of left in that position with just being the only person left, and then looking for a new artist to kind of pick up the mantle, I kind of put something out there on Twitter, and I came across Nero Crane's work, and I was blown away by one, the expressiveness of his character design, and yeah, like you said, that tightness of his action. Like, he could really just hammer down like some action scenes really well, which is, you know, those were two key pieces of Savage Wizards. Like, it's the action, and also like the physical comedy is a very strong component of it as well. So he did like a test page, and I was like, yeah, like let's do this. And he was like totally on board. Like, he loved the concept, and it's like, oh yeah, this is gonna be fun. And yeah, we've been having some fun behind the scenes.
Awesome Glad to hear it. And you know, I don't know Doug too well. We're kind of just Twitter mutuals. We've had some interactions, but from all my understanding, like, everyone thinks really highly of him. And I remember him taking a break because health stuff. But it's good to see that he's back, and it's great to hear that, you know, he's, you know, championing you to like, go, no, carry it on. Let's get this going. So, because I know how difficult that could be, just, you know, when you're trying to tackle on everything yourself and like move forward and find new people to come in on things. It's just, it's easy just to say, no, it's done. Move on, something else. But, you know, no one said comics are easy.
No. Yeah, I'd say, besides my wife, yeah, Doug has just always been like a really huge supporter, and just like, mm-hmm, really helped me in terms of like, yeah, finding that confidence and like, dude, like, no, what are you talking about? Like, this is a good page. Like, this is going on. Like, oh, like, that's a good idea. Like, so I was actually even talking to him about number three. Like, I was wrapping up the script for number three, and I had him looking over it, and like, he had some great things to say, like, yet again. Like, so, like, awesome. Yeah, Doug's just a great person to have in your corner for sure.
Awesome, that's great. So with Savage Wizard One, you know, it's the story of Renar. Am I saying it right? Renar?
Yes, you are.
Mm-hmm. You know, Barbarian Chief Renar, and you know, he gets backstabbed by his best friend, Skam. Am I saying that right?
Again,
right. I love fantasy names. It's also like, there could be so many. Is it Skam? Is it Skom? You know, like, how ominous are we getting with it? But basically, he's a barbarian class type fighter, and then you know, through very bad happenstance, he loses his hands, and he has to figure out a new way to fight, which, you know, is, I think, a great avenue to explore a fantasy story, where usually it's you know, something like, oh, the lowly, you know, barbarian has to rise up and become this great leader or whatever. And no, he was already good.
Yeah. Like,
now he has to become something different that he never thought he would be.
Yeah.
And I feel like with the first issue, there was a great blend of kind of like the comedy, but also like the heaviness of the story and the seriousness of everything. And going with issue two, is there a, are there any particular scenes that, without spoiling anything, that, mm-hmm, you're really excited for people to see?
Yeah, I'm super excited. Actually, Actually, so originally it's going to be a 24-page book, and I was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to have four more pages of just, like, crazy action just because, like, you know what? Like, there's not enough, you know, blood and guts in this. So, like, let's throw some more in there. So there's something I just added that, like, I'm super excited for Nero Corrine to draw and people to see. Beyond that, I'm really excited to see for people to finally see Renar doing some magic. I mean, that's like, hey, he's finally getting to the wizard part, and he's finally taking up the magical mantle. So I'm super excited to see what people think of that, and just I'm happy to see that part expressed in the comic now.
Cool, awesome. When this episode drops, the campaign will be currently live, so I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes for everyone to go check out. When you're kind of putting together a Kickstarter campaign, this is something always I like to ask people, like, are there certain tiers that you're really excited for people to have, or are you kind of someone, because, you know, there's so many ways you can do a Kickstarter with the tiers. You can go crazy and go nuts and have a ton of fun, crazy tiers, which could work to your favor or not.
Yeah.
Or you can keep it really simple and have just a handful, which could go to your favor or not. Welcome to Kickstarter. you don't know what you're going to do. It's going to work out for you. You just got to try it. But when you're constructing the tiers, are there any in particular that you're like, man, I think they're all great, obviously, but is there any one in particular, like, I really hope people go for this one?
I think for this one, obviously the main, like, basic tier of, like, hey, like, get the book. I did try to keep things, like, a little bit simpler since it's just me this time around. Mm-hmm. So I definitely didn't try to go too nuts. But I think one of the other tiers besides the physical tier that I'm looking forward to seeing how people react is I have a tier for this is more, I think I have it for both the digital and the physical, but some of my my other work compiling that into, like, a bundle. So people want to check out the stories like Head Cases, which is another mini series I'm working on. They can check that out. And in addition to other stuff I've written, like Ghost Gauntlet.
Awesome. Yeah. What's one of the things I do love about Kickstarters, especially with independent comics, is how, you know, you can just easily get, you know, with another bundle or whatever, or even if it's a stretch goal or something, not only that creator's work, but sometimes, you know, other creators that are pitching in and, like, giving their PDFs for things, and you can just be, it feels just like so much more of an incentive to just, you know, do all that. And I am right there with you with, like, trying to keep it simple, because with our past couple Kickstarters for Evie and the Helsings, it felt like, well, I think we've had at least a few people back every tier at the very least. It felt like a lot to, like, look at and track, and, like, and a lot of people really liked it, and we haven't had any negative feedback by it, but it just, like, you know, Steve's the guy who mainly runs it, but I'm trying to help him out and take on more of the fulfillment stuff and try to help out with more of that, because it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And you're doing it all yourself. And that was going to be one of my main questions, is, like, is this all yourself? Are you doing, like, a backer kit thing? Are you going to a service?
No, yeah, or so it's going to be, like, all me. So, yeah, if I get, like, you know, 200 physical requests, and that's me going to the post office, you know, 200 times or whatever. So, yeah, I'm definitely keeping that in mind in terms of, yeah, like, either the simplicity or complexness. Like I said, definitely trying to keep it manageable for myself, because I'm going to be the one that is doing all the fulfillment and getting all my Gemini mailers in order and all that. So, yeah, definitely not trying to go too nuts and, like, making sure stuff is going to be in the weight range and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Gemini mailers. Like, I never had assembled any of those until the second issue. Because we kind of split it up where it cost us a little bit of our profit, but I'm like, like, you can't take this all on yourself, Steve. Like, you gotta do something. So we actually had it. So, like, he sent me, like, he had, like, the suppliers, like, send me, like, not a half, but, like, a good portion of, like, mailers and books and stuff like that. And, you know, he just emailed me PDFs of all the labels. So I just printed out them, you know, slapped them on there and took them to the post office. But, like, putting the mailers and all that. And, like, I think altogether, I fulfilled maybe, like, 75 packages.
That's which, a lot.
Yeah. And I'm like, but, you know, one of my previous day jobs was, at the end of the day, I'd have to pack up a lot of stuff and ship it out. Mm-hmm. And it kind of brought me back to that assembly line mentality. And I never minded that. So I was like, I could do this. I could do this all day, you know?
Yeah.
And even though Steve and I are in the same state, it's still like 4.5 hours away from each other. Because the first idea was like, I would drive down there and help him fulfill and all that. So I don't know if you're going to have anybody local to you can have help fulfill, or you're going to have to recruit your wife.
Yeah. It's going to be a family affair.
Yeah. if my kids were old enough for me to trust them to do it, I'd be like, all right, let's go.
Yeah. Maybe in a couple more years I can start enlisting my kids to kind of help with that. But for now, yeah, it's going to be all me and maybe a little bit of help from my wife.
Nice. Nice. So with you taking over the main writing duties of Savage Wizard with issue 2, was there like an overall guideline for the series? Because if I recall correctly, it's four issues are kind of the goal.
Mm-hmm.
Total. Was there kind of like a goal, like how well plotted out were the future issues? Or was it just kind of like, here's where we're starting, here's just kind of a paragraph of like what happens after, and then we would write it as we go?
Yeah. So it was, I guess you would say, loosely outlined before. Before Doug had to step away, we had, I think, written like maybe the first 8 pages or so for number 2. So yeah, I ended up completing everything, and it more or less follows that outline. I did add some things that weren't there just because it's a loose outline. There's definitely space to take away things or to add a lot, but we have like the general, like, okay, this is where the story's going to start and this is where it ends, and kind of there's a lot of things that can kind of go in between. There's a lot of space for working on the fly and adjusting and things like that. But for the most part, like, the story is you know, there in the main beats.
Okay. And when Doug would work together, like, how was that? Like, was it like you would write a page or so, and then he'd kind of like go over and like do a few pages himself, and then you guys would kind of like, or would it be like a very common thing? Because I some of the writing duos I've had on, it seems to be a lot of the times it's like a shared Google document.
Mm-hmm.
And you're both like working on it, and you're both are like seeing this update, like, oh, what did he put in? And then and you're like, oh, that's cool. I mean, like, that makes me think of this and and do all this. So what kind of was that process like, before, it became, just you on duties?
Yeah, it was really fun. I'm not sure if we did it differently or the same as other folks, but basically I would write a couple pages, and then Doug would write a couple pages, and I'd write a couple, and then he'd write a couple. So we kind of go back and forth. And then we'd kind of switch on editing each other's like pages that we did to kind of make sure it's cohesive. But pretty much it would, yeah, like I said, go like a leapfrog. Like I do 3, he do 3, I do 3, he, so we get all the way to the end of the book.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
The best thing and worst thing about making comics is the fact that everyone does it a little differently.
Yeah.
So it's, even if like it is, the exact same setup, even when it comes to drawing comics, yeah, we could all use like even like the same tools and all that, but we still approach things differently. We still take things to a different level. Like, I might pencil in less than someone else might before they start inking, or vice versa. And with writers, I'm sure it's this exact same way. Some people have, a lot of plot putting down, a lot of the beats put down, and then they're like, okay, now I'm gonna keep detailing and digging in and doing all that. For you now yourself, what is your process kind of like? Are you very much a sit down and I got to get 5 pages done today, so I'm going to get 5 pages done today no matter what? Or are you like, because I know none of us can afford to wait for inspiration. Mike Norton, a great artist, and Bud, he has a new shirt, which I love. It's that inspiration is for amateurs.
That's awesome.
And, I can't say anyone I've talked to sits around and waits for inspiration. It's great when it happens, but there's, you got to sit down and grind it out. That's how you get things done. So, for you, like on an average day, what is the writing? Because you also have a family and day job and, all the other stuff. So where does writing fit in with your schedule? How do you like approach it every day? Do you write every day? Because, not everyone draws every day. Not everyone writes every day. So a very, very long winded way of saying, how do you work?
So it's interesting. I would say In the past, I would try to get up earlier and write just because, mm-hmm. yeah, like you said, with family and work and all that stuff, it's like, yeah, you have to find the time that works. And for me before, it was before heading to work, I'd try to get like now 30 minutes in and I'd write that way. But I kind of more recently gotten a job that starts a lot earlier. And so I do not want to get out of bed as early as I have in the past. So funny enough, I would say the last 6 months, maybe a little bit longer, I've been writing a lot at work when it's slow and I've been doing a decent job at it. So I think all of the parts of Savage Wizard 2 that weren't already written were all completed at work. So I'm getting a lot of productive moments at work these days, it seems. So yeah, that's my current process. Maybe it'll change, but right now, yeah,
while making sure your actual duties are taken care of, of course, yes, a little time, you know, of course, in case your employers happen to watch. No, I was definitely doing that when I had before kids came, and I switched to a at home part time thing. But that was definitely me, like, laying out pages on post-it notes in between little quiet moments and things like that, because that's what you got to do. You got to find it in and squeeze it in everywhere, and all that. So, you know, that this probably negates my next question, which is like, do you listen to anything while you write? Do you, because I know some writers are like, I need silence, or I need instrumental music only, or it doesn't matter if a barreling train is coming towards me, I don't care. Like, whatever's on is fine by me.
It's funny. I go back and forth these days. Like, I would say in the past, especially when I wasn't writing at work, I would like need some kind of instrument, you know, music to help me out. And especially like depending on what I was writing on, I'd kind of get some theme stuff. So like, yeah, for like a lot of first issue of Savage Wizards, I was listening to a lot of like hair metal, like just a lot of like a big, like over top, like instrumental metal stuff. And then for this issue, I would say like, sometimes I'm writing to instrumental music, but other times I'm just writing to nothing because, like, I'm like one, maybe like trying to not overstimulate myself or distract myself in case, like, yeah, I need to be obviously doing my actual job. And I think sometimes I could just kind of get in the groove, like when I'm, yeah, I was just like not listening to anything. So I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to keep doing it this way. But I can kind of go back and forth. But I feel like lately I've been getting more comfortable with writing without music.
Okay. Yeah, it's, you know, I'm definitely the person who kind of always needs to have something on or whatever. But I have, you know, when I do get those moments where like just something ends or whatever, and you're just in the zone and you're just going. That's like some of the like best moments, I think, because as fun as it is or nice it is to have like music or video or whatever playing while you're working or whatever, it's just you just get wrapped up in everything and you're in that world, and you're just when you sit back, you're like, oh wow, and then you look back at what you did and you're like, sweet.
Yeah, you know? That's the best, like literally a moment from Soul, like, yeah, it's like literally in the zone, like that's the best right there.
Yeah, it's, and you know, I've been trying to write here and there some stuff, and I'm my brain works in a very psychotic way where it's like I need more noise when I'm trying to write for some reason, I think, because it needs the tune, like I need the noise to have part of my brain actively try to tune it out.
Yeah, that makes
so
sense.
So it also tunes out the other things that are not in my brain while I'm trying to write. And it's really weird for me because it's like, it feels like incredibly controlled chaos is happening.
Sense.
And it's kind of insane sometimes. So it's always interesting to talk to a writer and kind of see what their process is with that, because as I'm trying to develop that skill for myself, you know, there's no wrong way really to like kind of do it, but I kind of like to know all the ways.
Yeah.
Just in case, you know,
it's funny. So talking about the process and everything now, and I would say the one good shift of surreptitiously writing at work is that, so at home, like, you know, I'm, you know, obviously at the leisure of my own internet and everything like that. So like, I would be, not necessarily wasting a lot of time, but like using up a lot of time, like looking up references that are going to be like, you know, 0.1% of the book versus like now I'm like, okay, I'll find that reference later. Like, you know, so I'll just like put an ad reference ad like versus like before, like again, like taking time away from writing, looking up references of like, oh, I wonder how a body falls from, you know, a 10-story foot building or something like that, you know, like, oh, seeing like, oh, like, oh, this is the angles and this is like the onomatopoeia I need for what that falling sound is. Versus now I'm just like, okay, I'm gonna get to later and keep writing, you know? So that's a interesting thing I've noticed.
Yeah. It's, you know, definitely working from home now and just trying to like factor in everything. That structure is so like key to have, because I can definitely, you know, I have my own ADHD thing happening too. So that's already like a ticking clock, because, you know, my brain won't, you know, I can't exactly choose exactly what my brain's going to want to hyper focus on. But, you know, it's about having that structure with it and not getting lost in it. Because when you mentioned, like, you know, just you're not wasting time because you're still doing things for the project. Mm-hmm. But it's like, is this what you should be doing right now for the project? Mm-hmm. And that is a trap I fall into so much. You know, like my biggest thing now is like if you know, I got, you know, all my book laid out, you know, and then I'll just start working on, you know, backgrounds for like page 12. And I'm like, why am I working on backgrounds for page 12 right now? Go to page one, finish that one first, you know, then two, then get up to 11 and then start on 12.
Yeah.
And you know, parts, you know, most of it, sometimes it's just like, you know, I got to do it all anyway. I feel this is what I'm feeling like doing. So if I feel like doing it, I'm still getting work done, but it's just, it creates further chaos down the line. You know,
I can see that.
When you get back to that page and you're like, wait, when did I, what was this? And then, so I'm definitely putting the cart before the horse for myself there. So I've been trying to like really rein that in and get the structure going. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I feel you there when it's just like, you know, and I'm glad that you've kind of found your way to like, okay, I'm just going to do this later. Boom, boom. Mm-hmm. And I'm really trying to do that. I'm trying to limit myself to at least like not jumping that far ahead, but like, you know, opening up, because since I work on my iPad, opening up like 3 or 4 pages and then like, you know, I have an hour to sit down right now. I'm going to work on some faces on each page, you know, and just go that way. And just kind
it's
of like,
hard to break those habits, but slowly but surely.
It's not the most efficient way, but it's not exactly inefficient.
Right. It's just like what you're used to. And so like you kind of get in that pattern. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it.
You know, one thing I'm struggling with, and I'm wondering if this applies for writers too as well, and I'm sure it might, but one thing I struggle with is like sitting with things before I'm like, okay, it's done.
Yeah.
You know, I've long ago gotten used to the idea of finished is better than perfect.
Oh yeah.
Always. But, you know, doing two books at once, always trying to feed books, pages in so colors can keep moving ahead and we can keep trying to have some type of schedule. I find a lot of times I'm not like, I'll upload a page and then I'll look at it and I'm like, oh shit, you know, I could probably do that part better. Or I could, you know, not huge things, but like little things.
Yeah.
Is that kind of the same for you? Or do you give yourself like the grace to kind of like, okay, I finished this. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna let it sit for a few days. I'm gonna come back to it. Or is it like, it's done, let's go.
Yeah, I feel like I can be of two minds. I can definitely almost be like too quick to be like, okay, it's done at times. Mm-hmm. And that's when it's good to kind of get, you know, peers in and outside voices, but like, slow down, like you missed, you know, a T that you could cross and an I. But in general, I would say like for me, I'm kind of always poking at it and tweaking it until like it's in the letter's hands and it's like, okay, that's last balloon, like, you know, like, but I'm like always kind of finding something that can be trimmed down and a little sleeker and tweak that way. So stepping back from it can kind of be tough until like like you said, that on that last page I'm like, okay, give it a week and see if there isn't anything too jarring. And then you can kind of, like I said, kind of slowly start that production process of, okay, like telling Nero Crane or whatever artist might be in that situation that, okay, it's ready to start working on, and then colors and letters and that kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah. I can imagine like as a writer, I would be absolutely terrible with like, oh, I can tweak up to the last minute, you know, and given the fact that like, you know, the things I am writing of there's about five different shorts and stuff I'm kind of toying around with. Most of them I'm planning on just doing everything myself.
Okay.
So I know the letterer Don is gonna fucking hate writer Don.
Right.
And artist Don's gonna fucking hate writer Don. And colorist Don's gonna hate everybody. He's gonna hate everybody.
Yeah.
So much so that he might just quit and might just be black and white. But so like having that much like tweakability is
a good and bad, right? Like, oh my gosh, like maybe too much power.
Yeah, it is too much power, but it's also like, you know, why I find myself more and more like glad that I'm working with other people on these other books, because it's, you know, I don't get to choose the colors on Evie and the Helsings and Spend the Night. But when I get them, when I see them, I'm like, this is great. This is not what I thought would be in my brain, but it's done by a professional who knows what they're doing. And I love it, you know, and, you know, same thing with the lettering and stuff like that. So it's like, it's nice to have to let go of the reins on that. And, you know, I'm coming from a place where the first book I ever really did, Pax of the Low Country, we did six issues. The sixth issue was a double-sized issue, which I ended up coloring myself the second half because we didn't have a colorist at the time. And the first issue I lettered myself, and I learned how to letter on that. And basically, I learned how to do everything I could possibly do on that book. And when I was done with it, I'm like, never again, never again. And then you rest a little bit and you're like, okay, maybe one more time, you know,
maybe it wasn't as horrible as I remember.
You know, this is your second time on the show. And both times you were talking about Savage Wizard, and first time we had, I believe Brian on as well, but we didn't get a chance to kind of dig in to the history of Leslie. Like, what was your kind of into comics? Like, what was your like earliest comic memories?
So I would say growing up, I didn't read a ton of comics. I read like, you know, like the Sunday Funnies, like comic strips and stuff like that, just because they were easily accessible. So, you know, growing up in the 90s, you know, I watched the X-Men animated show and Spider-Man. So I was obviously aware of comic characters, but you know, seeing the spinner racks at the store, I always wanted comics. My parents would never ever give me any money to get anything. I think for one birthday I got an X-Factor, I believe. I don't remember which X-Factor was, but I read an X-Factor. But so like jumping forward many years into the future of college, I'm still like, over the years, had kind of kept up my Ninja Turtles fandom. I was always a big Ninja Turtles nerd, still am. I think at the time it was past Dreamwave. IDW had just started their Turtles. So there was like a comic shop across the street from my college. And I kind of slowly got into comics that way. The IDW line hooked me. And then I think Civil War might have been happening around that same time, or like just wrapping up. So I got into Civil War and Runaways. And you know, growing up, I had always been writing stories. I drew a little bit too, but I kind of gave it up around high school. And so I was removed from writing stories a bit. Jumping ahead a little bit, I met my wife, then girlfriend, and we were kind of just writing short fiction together, like just coming back and forth, like a kind of writing party of two. And I think I was reading a ton of comics at the time. She's like, why don't you try to make your own? And I was like, I don't know how to make comics. And I was like, how do you make comics? And I think I hopped online and slowly started figuring out the process. But that's basically my comics journey. It was just, Ninja Turtles. So thank you, Kevin Eastman, Peter Laird, always always keeping me into the world of comics. And just, you know, reading that stuff, and then again, like the reading the bigger like Marvel event stuff, and then figuring out more indie comic stuff like Why Last Man and all the Vertigo books, and then slowly writing my own stuff. And just starting on like one pagers and then a couple of four page stuff, and then kind of expanding a little bit longer to the world of Savage Wizard and head cases.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I know I got a few years on you, but we have a few of the sills kind of have those overlapping cultural milestones, like the X-Men animated series and, you know, TMNT and all that. And I remember when IDW first, you know, they picked up the title, I was absolutely in love with that book. for a very long time, and it's never gotten. I stopped buying when my daughter was born, almost 8 years ago, and it's not that I stopped enjoying the book. I just stopped buying comics altogether. I just didn't have time to read them.
Same.
I wasn't going to be going near the shop I was going to in Chicago every week, so I couldn't keep a pull list there. And so it was never a dip in what I thought was the quality, because I've read stuff since, like the Sophie Campbell run, and I'm really excited to dig into Gavin Smith's run, because he's a bud and he's an amazing artist, and he's like a perfect fit for the Turtles, his style. But just the Ninja Turtles, like when that IDW series came, it kind of felt like they're back. They're back, man. So I have two questions that has to do with X-Men and Turtles, and I'm pretty sure you know I'm going to ask.
Okay.
One, did you watch the X-Men 97s?
I have not seen it yet. I'm sure I'm going to get to it, but I have not seen it yet.
As someone who literally was there day one when it premiered, fucking pumped.
Yeah.
Excited all the way through. Enjoyed the series as a whole, but when it was on, I really loved X-Men 97. Awesome. Like it was really, really like it had that flavor.
Mm-hmm.
The voices that were changed for new people, obviously took a little getting used to, cause I had just rewatched them.
the series right.
Like, weeks ago. So they're fresh in my brain.
Uh-huh.
And even everyone who returned, their voices are aged, it's been like 20 plus years or 20 years. So, but you cut by the second episode right in there. And, as a piece of work, it's better than the original series, just because the animation is a lot nicer.
Mm-hmm.
The writing is a lot tighter, but it still has that feel. It still has that feel. Please share your thoughts once you sit down and get a chance.
I'll definitely let you know.
And did you see, Mutant Mayhem?
I did. And what was your thoughts on it? I think for me, the nostalgia might still be there, but I want to say it's my second favorite Turtles movie ever. Like it's amazing. It's a great introduction for kids. It's a great Turtles movie. It's fun. The action's amazing. Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was
incredible. I fully agree there. It is if I had to rank it, it'd be my second favorite,
mm-hmm.
And again, this is speaking as someone who, I was born in 82. So when the first Turtles movie came out, I was there, in the theater. It's the first movie I ever saw twice in the theater, Secret of the Ooze right there opening weekend, The third one, not so much, but
not so much. We don't talk about that.
and then the CGI animated TMNT that came out mid 2000s,
2012. Really I love that show as well. That's a great show.
Yeah. The movie that came out, the one that was I forget the name of the company that did it, but there was a movie that came out before then.
I know what you're talking about. I can't recall the company. It was the one that's just TMNT. That one.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I really enjoyed that. I thought that was a great.
I thought that was movies underrated. I didn't think it was great, but I didn't think it I think it had some negative reviews, and I think it's still a good movie. I don't think it deserved the backlash.
The worst part was the villains, the turtles themselves were great. The Leo Raph dynamic
was amazing.
It was amazing. They really nailed all that, and I wish they had a better, I think if they had more classic villains as opposed to this new made-up one or whatever, I think people probably would have flock to it a bit more.
I wish they had a chance for a sequel, or if they had worked on some of the classic villains. I think agree, it would have been a little bit more well received.
Yeah for sure. But I saw Mutant Mayhem. I took my daughter to go see it. She's 7, and she loved it. I loved it. I there's people who had a lot of criticisms about some of the other mutants, mm-hmm. and stuff. And I was like, well, if you're complaining about the other mutant, the depictions of the other mutants, I can kind of see if you wanted to have a giant leatherhead, and instead to get a small one voiced by Rose Byrne, but also it's fine. It's fine. It's still funny. Yeah, it was still good.
It was great. Yeah. I was reticent, in the beginning, before we knew anything. I was like, oh, I don't know with Seth Rogen, but no, it was great. I held space for it to do what it wanted to do, and I I'm glad I did, and it was awesome. Mm-hmm. Like my daughter, who isn't super into Turtles, loved it. Like I couldn't get her to see it with me in the theaters. And I tried my hardest. She was not going to see how many theaters. But eventually, when it came to streaming, I finally wore her down. And she's like, oh, wow. Yeah, we should have seen this. This is great. And it's like, yes, victory.
Yeah. And for me, it was just like, I'm glad that they're continuing on with this version.
Yeah.
I'm glad that these kids that they had to do the Turtles are like going to be my daughter's generation of Turtles. Yeah. Like, those kids were so good.
Mm-hmm.
I love them so much.
This is, I would say, the best movie with them as brothers.
Yeah, and teenagers.
And teenagers, yes.
Teenagers,
exactly.
Yeah.
It was actually the teenagers front and center, and I loved it. Like, it was great.
Yeah, it was great. I'm looking forward to the animated series that they're going to have for that and the sequels.
Mm-hmm.
I was trepidatious as well because of the whole Seth Rogen thing. Because I'm like, I'm not a huge Seth Rogen fan at all. But the stuff I've seen that he's had in producing, like, I believe he's helping produce Invincible, which is awesome on Amazon. And, I can't deny that they did a great job with that movie.
Yeah.
When it comes to like, these previous, like these older nostalgic properties and stuff like that, is there one that you remember from your youth? You're like, you know what? I wouldn't mind if this came back.
That's a good question. Because obviously Turtles is still around. There isn't a ton that I'm super nostalgic for that I feel like isn't still around. Like Street Sharks, I like that. So maybe that. But yeah, other than that, like I'm kind of struggling to think of anything. I'm like, ooh, like this is like a hole in my heart that could be refilled right now. I'm sure there's something, but it's just escaping my mind right now. Is there something that comes to mind for you right now?
I've thought about this quite a bit since all these things were coming out. Everyone's having all these like, oh man, I can't wait. I have a very like spotty memory of my youth. It's not great. And I've actually like, I've kind of fallen down a rabbit hole of listening to these these horror channel videos, talking about this old crazy B movie from the 80s or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then realizing like how many of these I remember seeing in the middle of the night when my parents were asleep and going downstairs and watching HBO or whatever.
Yeah.
And like remembering like, oh my God, like I remember watching this. If you would ask me like, did you ever see this movie? I'd be like, what are you talking about? But then like seeing some of the visuals, I'm like, oh my God, I've seen this. And that's kind of happening with like cartoons now too. Cause I'm kind of like getting into like, by the way of like retro gaming channels, they're talking about older properties and older cartoons and stuff like Secret Galaxy, that channel.
Okay.
It has a lot of great videos on older media that we're all nostalgic for. Like, it's like, oh my God, oh my God. But like one thing I think hasn't really gone away, but I would love to see. And that is just like the American version of the Guyver. I don't know if you've ever seen those movies.
No.
When you're, it was an anime and I believe a manga series in Japan, but they had like the two American made movies where it was just like, the first one was like, they kind of like build like Mark Hamill to be like the superhero Guyver and this guy in this alien suit fighting these like alien monster things called Zoonoids or whatever.
That sounds cool.
Even though he wasn't the main character, but, that wasn't the greatest movie they had, but they had like really cool monster effects. And like when you're like 10 and you're seeing like super cool monster suits and fighting and stuff like that, you're like, yeah, and it's dark and it's gritty. You excuse a lot of things, but then you have the second one come out, which was essentially, the main character was played by David Hayter. Solid Snake voice, and all that. And it is essentially, it is very much a low budget martial arts, like gore fest of like Power Rangers with just heads getting split open by giant monsters. Like if like any of that kind of weird kind of like movies, like check them out, at least look at some YouTube videos.
Yeah.
About them.
Hell yeah. I'm looking at like, a little bit right now. It looks awesome.
But like, it also the Guyver itself, like the armor is like this really cool design.
Yes.
And it's like, I feel like we should be taking advantage of this somehow, and all that.
Sweet.
But instead we're bringing back Beetlejuice, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Which is fine. I know. I don't. I'm not disparaging Beetlejuice.
Actually, now that you said the Guyver, that kind of reminded me. I would love to see Ronin Warriors come back in some form or fashion. That was one of my favorites growing up as well. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
It sounds. I'm pretty sure I remember a few images from it. It was an animated thing, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it's like in that 90s area, like where a lot of that stuff came out. It gets blurry for me because you had like all the Power Rangers knockoffs too.
Oh yeah, of course.
I can't even remember the names of half of these things. Something Cyber Squad or whatever, and
yeah,
the like all these different things.
Sentai. Yeah, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, they're trapped in the computer.
And
VR Troopers and
exactly. And just the other day, my kids were on Disney Plus or whatever, and my daughter was like, X-Men 97, and she's like, that's daddy's show. He was a kid. And I'm like, yeah. And I was telling him, like, when I was little, I would wake up on Saturday mornings, I'd make myself a bowl of cereal, I'd sit down, and from X time to X time, we'd be watching cartoons in the morning on TV. And I'm like, you guys don't really get that anymore. Like, you do that, but like, you get to pick.
Yeah, what's exactly.
On. You get to pick your episode.
Not forced to just drop into whatever's on.
I didn't know if this X-Men episode I was gonna watch was new or not. And you sit down and it's like the Cyclops centric episode. And you're like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
that's the one I wanted. Yep. I don't know your exact age, so if you don't feel like saying it, that's fine. But
no,
like,
I'm 4 years younger. I'm 86.
Okay. So you still had some of that Saturday morning.
Oh yeah, experience. Totally. That was my very same experience growing up as well. It's just like you watch what was on, and I mean, like continuity wasn't really a thing. You just watched crap and enjoyed it. Yeah.
And it is really funny watching some of these these YouTube channels talk about these shows, and then they would mention and for some reason they aired this episode first when it was actually four episodes late. And it's like, oh wow. Like I was wondering, it just unlocks these things. So I'm like, am I really interested because of nostalgia, or did I really like this thing? And that's another thing that I've kind of gone down, because, nostalgia is a hell of a drug.
It is.
But like sometimes when you're just like, no, this was good. This was good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think of things that maybe I went back to and I'm like, oh, this wasn't good at all. I didn't like, what was I thinking? Have you done any of the deep dives into looking into the stuff you used to enjoy before? Or you're like, no, I know a ton,
because I feel like I really have time to be that reflective these days. But I will say a few years ago, I did, try rewatching the OG Ninja Turtles show, and past the first season, it isn't as entertaining as it was when I was a kid. As a kid I was I was just eating it up, but looking through an adult eyes, it isn't as compelling, just because it's more of a I'm not that this is necessarily a bad thing, but more of a monster of a week thing, less of a a through plot and those kind of things. So it doesn't really compel me as much as the later iterations, the 2K3 series or the 2012 series, and even Rise of the TMNT and stuff like that.
Rise and the 2K3 series, I have not watched those yet, but I've seen enough people that whose opinions I respect, who love those shows. I'm like, I need to give those a shot. And definitely because I hear a lot of enough great things about those things, but it's also I don't want to go and I have this really bad track record of if someone's talking up stuff, either it be a comic or whatever, oh man, this is so great, I love it. I'm like, okay, cool, I'll check it out.
Yeah.
And then I just have a visceral negative reaction to it, and I don't try to go in with expecting it to be great. I'm just saying, oh, this person likes it, it might be pretty good, and there's definitely some comics that were like that, and I'm like, oh man, I feel really bad saying I don't like this.
Right. Yeah.
And I won't say it.
Yeah, but same. Keep it quiet.
But there's been a few where I'm like, maybe I just need to get back to it. Maybe I need to come back to it or whatever.
Sometimes you need some time.
Which when I do, and if I do end up liking it, then I will reveal. I didn't like this at first, but I came back to it. I'm like, oh, I was dumb. You know? Like Jack Kirby when I was a kid. Like, what is this?
Of
This is the
course.
king of comics? And then as an adult, you're like, yeah, he's the fucking king,
Of
man.
course, you
Like,
got me.
look at the shit. But yeah, it's insane, the things. And you know, you mentioned you have kids, so it's like, you know, as these things are becoming available to our kids, like, I'm like, are they going to be interested in this? Like, right now, we're all really into retro games. Like, there's a ton of these like little mini handheld things that are out there. You know, to specifically give reference to anyone who might know, like the Ambernic, RG35, or I have a Pow Kitty something. And these are the names of the brands. But basically, like little mini Game Boy like things, they have all these emulators and all this stuff on there.
Gotcha.
And lately, we've just been kind of like, we all kind of like, including my wife, we all kind of sit around. We each kind of got, you know, one or a couple we share, and like we're just playing Mario.
Awesome.
like I finally like beat Super Mario 2 for the first time ever.
Oh, wow.
Like,
congrats!
And it's just like these weird like little things where it's like, I try to like play, I want to play like these more modern games, but it feels like I can't start a fucking game without having to make sure I have 4 hours to like invest into it before I can say, okay, I got to stop now.
Right.
You know, and keeping the theme with Turtles, like that's what I loved about Shredder's Revenge when that came out, that new game. Yeah. I don't know if you've had a chance to play it at all.
Easy. Like I like short games. Like as a kid, like, no, I want the game to be as long as possible. And now as an adult, like, the shorter the better. Bring me the short games, please.
Yeah. And you know, the fun thing about Shredder's Revenge is like even my 4-year-old son, he was able to play it. You
that's
know,
awesome.
He was able to just like kick some ass as Michelangelo.
Yeah,
you know,
that's smart.
It's like, and that game is like really replayable too. Because one, you can play one through, you're good. Great. But like as you level up the characters, it just becomes this a lot of fun just to beat the shit out of people.
That's
like,
great.
You know,
easy to hop in and hop out of. Yeah, it's a blast.
Yeah, I believe our mutual bud Lan Pitts was like loves playing as April, and I think he told me like he has like 100 hit combo he does with her or something.
God,
I'm like,
amazing.
That's fucking insane. Like, but it's also like, man, I want to learn how to do that just
yeah.
with April. Now, if you tell me, oh, you want to do 100 hit combo in Street Fighter or something, no, that sounds really complicated. Or Killer Instinct or whatever.
Yeah, but Turtles, yeah, that's definitely more doable.
The Turtles, like,
hits let's
do it.
Got some 50, 60 hit combos in.
Yeah. Well, enough dragging you through the dirty fields of nostalgia. You know, but before I have to let you go, so you can go rest and enjoy your day off. Back to Savage Wizard real quick. Messed up the last time, except Savage Wizard. Savage Wizard.
There it is.
the campaign is when this drops, campaign will be live. Please go check it out. Hopefully by the time this is up, you're already funded and you're just sitting pretty on some, looking for some stretch goals and
that's the hope.
And doing some fun stuff like that. But you know, something I don't really ask a lot of people just because it feels like an obvious disingenuous question, but like if you were to have a Savage Wizard movie, who would you cast? Who would direct it? You know, what would that look like in your pie in the sky dreams?
Man, pie in the sky. I definitely have thought about the actor. Duke Winston, I think would be great.
Okay,
for Renard, for sure. Let's see, for Okora, maybe I'm sorry, I remember Duke Winston. I'm really bad at actor names in general, but I think that what's her name, there goes my brain,
Well, what was she in? What was she in?
Walking Dead. Michonne's actor would be awesome for Korra.
Oh, why am I spacing on her name now?
Yeah, I know. Why is my brain not working?
I mean, let's just type it up and look.
Yes.
Terrible people here.
How dare us.
What was her name? You know, I stopped watching The Walking Dead so many years ago.
I did as well, unfortunately. Or maybe not so. I mean, we think we both knew what we were doing when we stopped. But Denai Guerra. Yeah, sorry, Denai Guerra. She'd be also a Guerra. For a director, that's a lot harder for me to think of a director. Who is really doing some great action these days?
there's a lot of really great action directors, but you know, there's also, you know, there's not a lot of big fantasy stuff anymore. So like, who do you really pick who could really take control of that? Who could really handle it? It's a lot of TV stuff for sure.
Yeah,
but
that's
like,
true.
Who would you pick? Like, and who really, and no offense to amazing, hardworking TV directors, but you really don't know their names unless you're really right. into it. So
yeah, unfortunately. But yeah, I'm sure there would be someone great out there, but my brain is obviously not wired to think of any of them right now, unfortunately. But yeah, those two for sure pop out in my mind in terms of like the faces of Savage Wizard for sure. But that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that right then and there, just with those two characters, like, yeah, this is that would be a must see, great vibe movie.
Yeah,
we need this. Yeah, I would, you know, as much as I love the comic series and comics are amazing, like having something like this be like a movie or a series or something like that, I think would be so awesome. Like, just it would just look so different from everything else, because you have these nasty orc things and you have like this the barbarian aspect, but then you have the magic, and it feels like a lot of fantasy shows these days are kind of stuck in the Game of Thrones kind of like vibes. And it's like, nah, man, let's bring back some Conan shit. Like, let's bring back some this, like,
exactly.
old school, you know, dirt road.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, just crazy jungles and stuff like that. Just get nuts with it. Yeah. So, Leslie, it's been great chatting with you.
Of course,
thanks for
always.
Giving up your time. Savage Wizard issues 1 and 2, because you can get number 1 as well if you missed out on the first one, that's which right. I highly recommend you do. It's live now on Kickstarter. Please go check it out. Links in the show notes below. Why can't I fucking talk today? Links in the show notes below, please. Please give this book the support, because I will be personally mad at you if this book is not extremely overfunded and Leslie doesn't have to ship, if he has to ship less than 200 packages, I'm going to be pissed off at all of you.
Don't make Don mad.
Give him, if he's not just cursing my name for wishing upon this much work for him to pack and ship, because this book is such a success, I will be, personally sending nasty letters to all of you. I don't know how we do that, but anyway, go check it out, because I want to see issue 3. I want to see issue 4. I want to, see a trade collection. I want to.
Yes, that's then, the goal. That's the dream. Getting to trade.
I want to buy. I want to buy a big, nice, juicy hardcover of this book and just put it on my shelf and be like, "Yeah, that's some fucking shit." When my kids are old enough, like, read this. Daddy knows that guy. Daddy knows that guy. Yeah. That's mainly, I just want it for clout for my kids. I just want all my friends to be successful, so I just have clout with my kids. Yeah. That's what all parents want.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I want.
Seriously, though, please go check out Savage Wizard. Again, links down below in the show notes and description. Leslie, let everyone know where they can find you online.
Yep. I'm on Twitter, it's never X, at Les Wright, LESWRITE. Instagram is LES_WRITE. And you can find me on my website as well, leswright.com. And pretty much anywhere on the internet, some variation of Les Wright, you'll probably find me if I have that social media thingy.
All right, well, there you go. Leslie, once again, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks for having me.